Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready?
Yeah.
Hey. It's Catalina Martone, or Kitty Martone, as so many of you know me as Healthy Gut Girl. I have a lot of aliases, Mark. This is crazy. Should I do something about that? Should I compound them and just call my Mighty Cat, maybe? How do you like that?
A catitude.
Catitude is here.
Catitude. Catarageous.
This is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know, and we're coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine today, actually, because we needed a little more room, because we actually have a guest, and we interviewed him, and we already had our little stint with him, and it was really, really cool. What'd you think, Mark? Yeah. Wasn't it amazing?
Yeah. Oh, he was. He was so knowledgeable to really put all of this information that you're going to get about hormones into perspective, how complex it really is. But I'm just excited that we actually had a guest.
I know. Well, I'm just picky. I'm picky, and I want people who are like-minded. It's important to me because I don't want to get onto a podcast and feel like I need to, you know, explain why this person is completely like negating everything we know or everything we, you know what I mean? Just like-minded.
No, he was a compliment, and it's a good long wait. It is a compliment, and it was a good long wait to have him on, because it was well worth the time.
Yeah, and it took us to get to have more guests, and I want to have I have someone already lined up for our next one who is a specialist in the areas of he's a chiropractor, and he's a specialist in the areas of bone loss and mineral balancing. Anyway, so let's get to this wonderful guest. His name is Robert Gelibolian. And he is a biochemist, and he's got a doctorate in biochemistry, and he is wonderful. We love him to death. Please enjoy. Okay, so we have with us here Robert Gelibolian, and I was actually practicing before we actually talked, Robert, and I was saying it, Gelibolian. How does that sound?
That sounds awesome. I actually like it. I might actually take that up.
It is French.
No. It's not French, no. Right?
But when I went to French school, no, it's Armenian. But when I went to French school, that's how they usually actually pronounced it.
It's cool. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it sounded flary.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to have you here because Mark has always been he's been pressuring me for quite some time to have guests. And we have had a few, but yes. I'm very particular because I really like to find people who have one foot in the conventional world of medicine and one foot in the alternative world of medicine. And that's kind of hard to find because otherwise the podcast is quite skewed and the information is quite skewed. And when you joined my estrogen dominance support group, I was thrilled when you would. He just gave me the thumbs up for those of you who haven't joined yet.
Yeah, this is an audio, not a video podcast.
So he joined the estrogen dominance support group, and he was chiming in on a lot of my different or a lot of comments that people would post. And he was speaking like my very favorite mentor, Dr. Robert Marshall, who happens to be a biochemist as well. And that's what you do. Is that right? Tell me what you are. Yeah.
Yeah, I am a biochemist by training. I did my bachelor's at UCLA, my PhD at Texas A&M, actually studying genetics. Then I went into all sorts of drug discovery forays, thinking I'm going to make my mark in that area. So 20 somewhat years in oncology and inflammation, doing drug discovery and supporting those kinds of platforms like Genentech, Eli Lilly, what have you and whatnot. And I finally decided, you know, my family's a health conscious thing. That's not the way to go. So
okay,
here we are.
Nice. Well, what really?
Oh, so you were in the pharmaceutical world and went. You said I can't do that and went into the alternative.
Not alternative. Route. I wouldn't call it alternative because once you start replacing the pharmaceutical with the alternative model, it's the same business model. It doesn't change. I'm into the business of translating science into whatever. Somewhat communicating science to the layman's terms. Mm-hmm. And this is what we as scientists do a very piss poor job of in terms of the public. We really do. I mean, we really are at fault, partly because it's a complicated thing. So, but that's
right.
What I want to do.
Well, that's where I feel like I come into play. But
there
you
you
see,
go.
because I feel like for some reason, I don't know why, I have some part of my brain that's able to kind of translate and make it really digestible. There's that word, and easy to digest for people. And so with your help, I think, you know, we can definitely get a lot of questions answered that so many people, not just on my estrogen dominant support group, but a lot of our listeners can have access to this information. And one thing that really grabbed me in your bio was the 15 peer-reviewed publications in the field of inflammation, cancer, and neurodegenerative disease. That for me is like eye candy, and it really grabs me in, and then I'm sucked in. So I love the fact that you're really into this. You're a scientist, that you have a passion for this. So let's get started with. I mean, there's so much subject matter, but since you came to me on the estrogen dominant support group, let's begin with my favorite subject, which is right now, xenoestrogens.
Loaded topic.
Yeah.
What would you like to know? What they are and stuff?
Yeah, well, I think most of our listeners know, but just let's give a brief definition from a scientist. A brief definition.
Yes. Anything that has estrogenic activity, they call it either a phytoestrogen or a xenoestrogen. And phytoestrogens are generally something that come naturally from plants. And pretty much everything that can have that D ring of the estrogen, talking geeky here, and the OH group, so the shape, one part of it can be completely estrogenic, and it can actually act through the machinery of estrogen and progesterone and so on and so forth to actually elicit response. Xenoestrogens are similar, except xenos come generally from man-made kind of processes. So whether it be plastics, plasticizers, fertilizers, pesticides, they have the same type of general structure that your receptors can actually recognize, and they think it's an estrogen, therefore it sort of mimics the estrogenic activity. Okay.
Now, is that just an accident? Is that just a random accident? Because that's so strange.
That is a very good thing. See, one of my passions these days is actually really thinking about getting into the head of Mother Nature, thinking about, okay, what is this whole thing about evolution? And what was the plan? What was the idea? If I was Mother Nature, how I would design basically nature. And the purpose of Mother Nature is to maximize efficiency and survival and lengthen life. It's an experiment in the making. You and I and Mark and everybody in the 9 billion population of Earth, we are currently participating in an experiment. It's not a democracy. It didn't ask you a question, who would like to participate in this experiment? We do. And in 100 generations, we'll actually be better or worse type of humans, depending on what we do. So that's what Mother Nature sort of threw in terms of her variables into that equation. I said, these are the set of rules that you play by. Is it an accident? No, because a lot of our human physiology, in my opinion, depends heavily on hormone response. So everything from bone metabolism to your brain chemistries to your reproductive sex organs, stress hormones, whatever have you, they heavily depend on the signaling that comes from this these molecules, basically, that nature has produced. So if I were Mother Nature and I produced that, I want to put enough leakiness in the program, so to speak, if you allow me to use the term loosely, leakiness in the system, so that way you don't have a very absolute system. So if that thing disappears, you can still function and survive. So if all of a sudden our receptors, for example, were only going to recognize estrogen and nothing but estrogen, we may actually be in problems, and women may not actually survive beyond 45, 50 years of age because they wouldn't be able to respond. Now, what we as humans have done is come and say, well, you know, 24 hours per day, that's not enough productivity for us. Mother Nature's rules are a little bit restrictive, so watch out. Here we come. We're going to produce our own set of rules on top of the set of rules that Mother Nature has produced and produce our own things. So we have added additional leakiness to the system. And now the body is trying to sort of figure out how to deal, how to juggle this entire thing together.
Okay.
That's so how I think about it.
So you're saying Mother Nature, our sort of physiology, it's not an accident that we have this room for error in a way to allow for other things to work potentially. But the making of the xenoestrogen, the fact that it happens to be estrogenic in nature, that is just a terrible accident but the fact that man made it.
And it's not really man's fault, because anything that you basically synthesize or produce, whether it's plastics or anything, invariably you're going to have that estrogenic structure in it.
Oh, okay.
That's how plastics usually work. That's why BPA is bad, but then the non-BPA is actually worse because it contains similar type of a structure. It just depends on the kind of activity it sort of elicits. So you almost cannot get away with synthesizing anything that doesn't have that estrogenic structure.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, sure is.
Okay.
Does that mean you don't drink anything out of any kind of a plastic?
Sure, I do.
Whatsoever?
Of course I do. If I'm thirsty enough, I'm not going to be looking around to find the God-given spring. You know, if it's a water bottle that Nestle has made that's lying around, I'm going to be drinking out of that bottle.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's just a matter of how do you sensitize your system to be able to clean that up? Because physiology is about the buffer zone. You know, as kids, if you look at kids, if you get a kid and an elderly to get into a car accident, I was putting this analogy in front of a seminar group just last week. Put an elderly and a kid into an accident, car accident, the kid's going to bounce back in no time. You know, God forbid if that happened. But the elderly is going to take a little bit of time. That's because the buffer zone has shrunk. We have taxed our organs, our systems to the point that we don't have that kind of buffer zone, whereas the kid has a large buffer zone to sort of operate from. So now it's a question of how do we bring the body back? How do we build that buffer zone back so we can sort of thrive?
Mm-hmm. Well, that begs the question then, is that buffer zone, can it be brought back as one gets older and the functions of the body begin to diminish?
Yes, you can to some point. And it depends. Look, there are a lot of sick people around. I've seen quite a bit of people. The fact that they're not dead is testament to the fact that the body is very resilient. I'm sorry, I'm bringing the analogy to the extreme point, but it sort of paints the picture. The fact that we don't die is testament to the fact that the body's resilient, can sort of adapt. It's going to tell you that it's sick, it doesn't like it, I really don't like what you're doing to me. You know, I'm going to manifest myself as osteoporosis, dementia, Alzheimer, insulin resistant, whatever have you, but I'm going to tell you that what you're doing to me is not right. Fix it. And if you don't heed that message, it kind of keeps going down, and then eventually it's going to give out. That's just the way it works. So the question is to catch it early on and start implementing strategy, because the earlier the strategy, the better and the easier it is to sort of implement and bring your biology back online, rather than have a whole new train track that you have to make bringing it back online to the main.
That, I love that. That was said so well and
yes.
Yeah, easy to understand. So that does bring me to this interesting point about xenoestrogens and how, for those listeners who don't know, because these things can mimic estrogen, it really puts people, I would say women, but it's men and women, children, everyone, at the risk of being estrogen dominant quite often. Like that, it seems to be really common to have this at any age now. And I'm finding on the support group and with my clients and just working with the doctors that I know, how frequently I see it. And I wonder sometimes, is it just because my attention is pointed at it, or, and it's what I do, or is this really happening? Are we just so saturated with these xenoestrogens and with estrogenic I don't know, I want to say lifestyle, because it's like this toxic burden. And all these people are including myself. I mean, this has been an ongoing, and for many of you already know, but I'll say to you, Robert, you don't know much about my personal medical history. And I'll just say this, which is that I've been sick since I was born, and up until around 10 years ago, it'll be 9 years this week that my husband and I got married. Thank you very much. Yay!
Congratulations.
But, thank you. So about 10, almost 11 years that I met him, and he helped me he's a chiropractor and helped me to start to get well. And I was introduced to the body ecology diet and gut health, and I became obsessed with that. And I did that for years and was really just went through this massive journey of getting well. And then so many things got better, but the one thing remained. And under that one thing, that umbrella of that one thing, were all these hormonal things that remained.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's how I found out about progesterone therapy, and that's how I started to feel better. But I still, you know, I feel like I'm still exposing myself to these xenoestrogens. Any stress that I'm under, all, you know, anything, I go off the train a little bit with my diet, and it's like things come back so quickly. Mm-hmm. And something that you said to me earlier on when I first met you, you said, because it's not the root cause, it's not the progesterone and the hormones mm-hmm. aren't the root. So let's talk about that root.
That's where things get a little bit complicated. I think these days, whether it's functional, whether it's conventional, whatever practice you want to take, and that's why it's sort of important to sort of translate the science. And we're still learning about these things. My fascination with hormones began a long time ago. But okay, so imagine it this way. Everybody's sort of fixated on hormones, estrogen, progesterone, DHEA, whatever have you. Somebody's fixated on that, and that's the part of the elephant that they sort of see and touch. And it's important to realize that these guys are the fuel, and they're different kinds of fuel. One is unleaded fuel, the other one is leaded fuel, the other one is diesel fuel, but they're fuel. They burn. They do, you know. Without a machine, this fuel doesn't do anything. You gotta have a machine for that fuel to exert and elicit a response in the body, period. So I can take all the estrogens and progesterone, put it in a test tube, nothing's gonna happen. I'm gonna have to have a machine, put it in a cell so the cell can respond to that fuel. So that's where the machines come into play, and we call them estrogen receptors, we call them progesterone receptors, we call them androgen receptors, and as we're finding out, there are various classes of these things. For example, let's talk estrogen. Forget progesterone for a second, because the issue gets really complicated. That's why I'm saying don't just fixate on the hormones. Metabolism of hormones are very important, particularly for estrogens. And a lot of women, as they're hitting their, you know, prime years, I mean, metabolism goes down the drain, and you're starting to metabolize estrogens down the proliferative type pathways that cause cancer.
And this is men too, just to be specific.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the reason we're talking about the estrogen dominance, majority of them are women participating in that group, but it absolutely actually defines us as well, because our cancer progression for men, for prostate cancer, is highly estrogen dependent. The prostate cancer is estrogen dependent. Even though they think it's testosterone that's driving it, that's one of the aspects. Again, coming back to the estrogen. So if you have a fuel, people talk about xenoestrogens, phytoestrogens, estradiol, estrone, estriol, right? So these are all the different kinds of fuel. So if I were to take progesterone and add it to a bottle of estradiol, I'm not going to convert, or let's take xenoestrogens, xenoestrogen, BPA, add it to estradiol, I'm not going to convert one to the other. They're going to get diluted. And it's all in the body, it's a concentration phenomenon. It's how much of what you have. And to make matters worse, each tissue has different amounts of machines, the estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor. So the endometrial lining has different amounts of estrogen receptors, and there are two classical types, the alpha and the beta. So think of it as the Lexus and the Camry type thing. Now, the alpha is predominantly, if the estradiol or the estrogen binds to it and it signals through it, it's a proliferative signal. That means that's telling the cell grow. And in the breast tissue particularly, the alpha is very much predominating. If there's too much of it, then it's going to signal too much. And that's why for postmenopausal women, for example, risk of breast cancer sort of goes up significantly because the progesterone goes down. And progesterone, through its machine, the progesterone receptor can actually modulate the estrogen machine. So even though estrogen functions and is signaling through its machine, the progesterone receptor kind of, the machine comes and says, well, you can't go that fast. You can't go 100 miles an hour. You got to go 55 miles an hour. It doesn't say that we have to eliminate estrogen from the body. That's bad, bad, bad. And that's sometimes the message that I hear. A lot of people are thinking that estrogen is bad. If I'm estrogen dominant, that means it's bad. I got to get rid of estrogen, pump up everything with progesterone to get rid of estrogen. And that's not the right message, because your brain chemistry is highly dependent on estrogen function. Your bones are very sensitive to estrogen function as well as progesterone. So you cannot eliminate these things. So now, in a case of, so you understand now we have hormones at one level, now we have the machines at this level, but these machines, you know, at the underlying level, they also have to interact and elicit a response through either genomic signaling, whether it's via your DNA, or whether what we call in our parlance non-genomic signaling, that means via indirect type of means. Majority of things are usually done through genomic signaling. So that means the estrogen receptor, the machine, when it's bound to its fuel, it binds to either another estrogen receptor, like the Camry, the Lexus binds to the Camry, or the Lexus can actually find another partner, Lexus. Or you can actually bind to the progesterone receptor. So the different combinations of these things can go to different parts of the DNA and express different kinds of genes, some of which genes can be anti-proliferative. So for example, if the Camry and the Lexus got together and the Lexus says grow, 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 but the Camry says don't grow as fast, it modulates the Lexus. Okay?
Right.
So okay. It's sort of important to go. And the xenoestrogens, they actually operate via an entirely new class of estrogen receptors called the ERR, the estrogen receptor something or other. I forget what they there are different versions of it. One of it is the GPR30 that was discovered. So BPA, for example, as a xenoestrogen plastics, operates by activating that particular estrogen. So, and that's what we don't want to do. So if you think about this whole milieu from a healthy standpoint, a healthy body has healthy levels of estrogen, healthy metabolites of estrogen, healthy levels of progesterone, healthy levels of XYZ. Now, when you hit, as we get older, particularly for women in menopausal age, progesterone precipitously drops, right? Mm-hmm. Estrogen levels drop slower, but they still drop. That's that gap that produces that estrogen dominance that defines the women's.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it's still estrogen deficiency. So people still think if I'm estrogen dominant, I have too much estrogen. You could actually be deficient, but still be dominant by that. That fact. So now if this starts going down, the estrogen starts going down in concentration. So think about it in a bottle in your body, in your serum, in your blood. If estrogen levels are down and you're consuming a lot of xenoestrogens, so that concentration starts increasing in your body. So the signaling that takes place is via what you don't want to take place. So your train or your car is going 120 miles an hour rather than 55 miles an hour. It can really get into a wreck pretty fast. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to sort of eliminate or reduce the amount of environmental or especially man-made type xenoestrogens. Now, phytoestrogens, which are the plant-based, there's a lot of compounds. Even the favorite one of everybody, which is resveratrol, that comes from red wine. Everybody has it. That's a phytoestrogen, even though it's a weak phytoestrogen. But you're not going to stop drinking wine or taking your resveratrol. A lot of plants actually have it, too. Every veggie and every fruit that you actually eat have polyphenols that you're very familiar with. Have a load full of, I mean, these are polyphenols. The phenolic ring is very much exactly like a estrogenic structure. So these are phytoestrogenic. But that doesn't mean that we're going to stop eating plants and fruits, right?
Right.
Uh, So hopefully that sort of paints a picture as to the complexity of what's going on around.
Yeah.
So in my view, I think the fuel is a very small part of the equation. And the way I look at it when I sort of engage people is I focus on that and I really look at that as 5, maybe 10% of the picture. And the only thing I look at that mainly is the metabolism of how the estrogens are metabolized.
And that's what you considered the engine of the system?
The fuel.
The fuel.
Yeah. The machine is actually what's going on underneath. And then we start concentrating, okay, if you're reacting to something like, because there's a lot of women, like you said, they come on the forum, they say, well, I fixed my estrogen metabolism. Everything is firing normally. My fuels, I have the correct unleaded, the leaded, and the diesel fuels in my body, but I'm still not feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
So then how do you explain that? The only way you can explain it is by the complexity of how these machines are interacted and the different tissues that are expressing these machines. So in some women, maybe one of the machines is not expressing well, or there's a mutation or a polymorphism in the gene that's expressing that machine. Therefore, it's firing. It's like having four cylinders, but three of them are only working and one of them is sort of not firing correctly.
Right.
I'm sorry, I'm using the machine analogy here, but it's sort
no,
of...
No, it's great. We're the king and queen of analogies, so it's awesome. You know, that you just said something that really rang a bell, which is... what did you just say?
I don't know which part.
Go on, just take a moment. That was a lot of stuff he said.
I know. About the 10%. Right. Okay. So going back to the what's what it's really about, right? So the 10% is about the fuel. It's about the progesterone supplementation or the estrogen supplementation. But and then every person is so different. And this is you just basically outlined and shed some more light on how complex it actually is. So you know you can't just it can't be one broad stroke for everyone, especially now with everyone knowing or being having access to knowing if they have these genetic mutations, like you said, like the MTHFR and all this these other types of genetic mutations that complicate things even further. And so what I want to kind of understand is what so there isn't a one size fits all cure, obviously there never was, but with this burden or this challenge of xenoestrogens. So let's just take someone who's like me, who's done so much to get rid of all of that. But I live in a big city. You know, I have a fairly stressful life as far as being active. So there's that sort of the stress level, the stress aspect of it. You know, what can you do with not the fuel, but obviously we have to do something about the root. And that is what, you were talking about this before, is it minerals? Is it, you know, it's obviously has something to do with diet and balancing minerals and the gut health and all of that, which is also what I'm all about. But tell us what's next after that.
That is the $64,000 question, and that's a very important question. I think one of the first things I do, even though I said it's 5 to 10% is the fuel, you really have to, it's important. It's not just from perspective of therapy that take progesterone, take estrogen. It's from perspective of making sure that you're metabolizing estrogen right. I won't do anything, especially with women clients or male clients, unless I'm sure, like what we did with my wife, unless I'm sure that they're metabolizing estrogen correctly. You can't supplement these things unless that's absolutely dead on. At least get the fuel part right, mm-hmm. as far as science, because that's easily done. Do the Dutch test, do the Genova test, whatever test is available, urine, saliva, they all produce different kinds of results with different, I'm not in favor of one test or another, because to me, testing is only one part of the equation. It's what really you do to individualize the plan for that person. And it's a crapshoot. There's no protocol for that. So I can't really tell this is what we do. But this is how I generally tend to approach it from a scientific perspective, not from a clinical perspective. Mm-hmm. It's okay, let's fix the estrogen metabolism first. Once we're sort of clear that your body can actually handle, you're making the proper and the correct estrogens, the non-toxic estrogens. For me, the 4-H is particularly of worrisome. And I need to reduce that because that's the one that goes directly to your DNA and causes carcinogenic mutations. It interacts with your DNA directly.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you right there real quick. So tell the listeners, because I'm sure Mark doesn't know either. So you just said 4-H, so let's talk about how that happens, and then let's use your wife for an example, how you came to the realization that she was not metabolizing her estrogen well or her hormones well, what was happening with those metabolites or whatever. So not into great depth because I know that it's complicated, but if you can sort of give us a general idea of how you discovered that in someone.
So we know scientifically that, for example, estrogens have to be detoxed and neutralized, because estrogens, you don't want to recirculate estrogen in your body. You use it, then you kind of dump it. That's the way it sort of works. Because if it circulates around, it's going to cause all sorts of havoc. It's like a bad child in a china shop that's sort of misbehaving. You need to sort of control it, even though it does all the good things. The liver obviously has several phases of enzymatic reactions that neutralizes. That's one of our major detox organs. So is the skin and the lungs and all the other things. But the liver really takes the grunt of everything that we put it through. And one of the three enzymes in the phase one detox, so this is the one that basically start prepping your compounds, pesticides, estrogens, whatever that you give it, that it starts prepping it. The phase two enzymes, they tag it. So they put a methyl group on it, they put a glutathione group on it, so that way they flag it. So when it's going down the assembly line, then they know, the workers sort of know, okay, this one is slanted to be eliminated, this one is slanted to be recirculated or whatever. So the prepping step is important for the estrogens. The first line, when it's coming off the assembly line going to the liver takes those estrogens, says, okay, I got to neutralize because the body cannot use this. Then it neutralizes it. In the process of neutralizing and prepping it, it actually makes more dangerous compounds than compared to the actual estrogens. So now, if think about it as an assembly line, if you have an assembly line, you got packages coming through. If you got way too many packages and your second assembly line guy, there's only one guy putting things in the packages, things are going to overload pretty quickly, and it's going to start flowing. It's like fuel flowing out of your car tank, and it's starting to.
It's like Lucy on the conveyor belt with the
With the
chocolates.
chocolate.
She just can't do it
Perfect
all, right?
example. Perfect example. Exactly. You don't want that to happen.
Right.
So you want to make sure that your phase two is actually prepped. As soon as that thing is made, it flags it, neutralizes it, and slants it for elimination. That's where digestion, which you do particularly very well, and you preach people about that, is extremely important. You gotta eliminate, gotta eliminate, gotta eliminate. Because if you don't, you're just putting it back into circulation, doing nothing more. So phase one enzymes for estrogen, there are three different kinds. One produces the 2-hydroxy estrogen, we call it. Okay, that is usually the beneficial estrogen because that's weaker than the original estrogen, and it's actually healthy, apparently, to have that. There are two others. One is the 16-hydroxy.
That's the
Now,
bad guy.
well, there are two conventional thoughts on this, and I'm still not exactly sure, because the 16-hydroxy can convert to the good guy, the estriol, that's actually beneficial as an anti-proliferative. But right now people are sort of thinking that the ratio between the 2-OH and the 16-OH are indicative of where you sort of are. So you sort of don't want to have too much 16-OH in your system. The bad guy that I really worry about when I see in people's system is the 4-hydroxy. That guy, by virtue of its chemical composition, can directly be carcinogenic to your DNA. So it can go to your DNA and cause mutations directly. So if you have something like that and a mutation occurs, the next generation of cells that are generating, they generate with that mutation. So if there's like a machinery, like an estrogen receptor that needs to bind to that DNA, and all of a sudden it cannot recognize it because of that mutation, you have abnormal signaling.
Wow.
Okay? So the 4-H is the one that I really worry about. I don't remember my wife's numbers exactly, but I think she was like 40% or something in the 2-OH. It was okay, not really. But she was fairly high on the 4-OH. And so we immediately sort of tackled that on your forum. People sort of talk about the I3C and the DIM and all sorts of different compounds that kind of do this.
And that helped her. So just briefly, Mark and other listeners who didn't catch that, on the forum, on the estrogen dominant support group, there is a something called DIM, which is dimethyl, say it for me, please.
Diindolylmethane.
And thank you, scientist. And then there's the and basically that's you can find that in cruciferous vegetables, and it's very high in broccoli. You can find it in broccoli. But they also make a product, a supplement called DIM, where you can get products that are known to reduce estrogen levels using this DIM. And there's other things like myomin. There's other herbs that do that. But it's supposed to convert the bad estrogen to the good estrogen. And so that's the idea here. Now, did that work with your wife?
Yeah, just as an added thing from a scientific perspective, there's DIM and there's I3C. I3C is the parent molecule that's actually present in the cruciferous vegetables. That's what gets converted into DIM and other products. Ah. Now, the scientific literature actually thinks DIM is partially responsible for the conversion. You remember those three pathways that I gave you, the 2-OH, the 4-OH, and the 16-OH? Mm-hmm. DIM downregulates the enzymes responsible for the 16 and the 4. So it tapers down the enzymes that are responsible for making those. So that's good. But it doesn't do anything to the 2-OH. Now, okay. I3C, on the other hand, the parent molecule, it actually upregulates the enzyme that makes 2-OH. So you want that. So okay. I3C has much more beneficial effects than DIM does. Now, problem is a lot of people, as you know, they suffer from stomach acid problems. They take too many antacids. Now, you require a very strong acid environment to convert I3C into DIM.
Ah.
So my wife, fortunately, is a lemon drinker and good stomach acidity, so that was no problem. So we didn't go with supplementation. We went with cruciferous vegetables. We upped her intake. And within, I would say, I don't remember, a month, month and a half, 2 months, her entire estrogenic profile sort of shifted. Now she was into 60-65% 2-OH and very minimal amount of 4-OH. So that's important. So once we did that, then we tackled everything else. Now, how do we sort of get to the machinery part, because now we got the fuel straight.
So, okay, I'm going to stop you again and go back up just a tiny bit. So for those women like myself who, when taking the DIM, actually got worse, where breast swelling occurred and spotting occurs and stuff like that, this is indicative, you're saying, of low hydrochloric acid production in the stomach, because it's not converting it to, it's the I3C is not converting it to the DIM. Therefore, the DIM is not able to downregulate the 16 and the 4 hydroxy.
It's a little bit more complicated, because I don't know the short answer to that. I don't know why, okay. But if you take DIM, it will lower the enzyme that makes 16-OH and 4-OH. As to the symptoms, why you got worse depends on how you got worse. Because the symptomology, depending on the tissue that's reflected, some people get worse moods, for example, or some people get worse breast tenderness, or some people
that's a really common one. On the forum, that's a really common one, is the breast swelling, and it not just with the DIM and the I3C, but also with flaxseed. I don't recommend flax oil, but I definitely like flaxseed and I crave it. But that's very curious as well. Like to grind fresh flaxseed, a lot of women will immediately, like that day, they'll feel the symptoms getting worse. And I don't have an answer for them on that. So
my take on that is because the machinery is so complex, nobody really knows. There's no test for me to say, go get this blood test or this urine test that tells me what your machinery, unless I take you apart and take every tissue and start analyzing how much of the machines, each of the machines, each of your tissues making, there's no way to know. Mm. So you sort of have to
guinea pig it
and sort of go with that. With phytoestrogens and women that develop these issues, I would say stay away from it, because it, especially in postmenopause, I would say because your estrogen levels are low enough, now phytoestrogens tend to increase in concentration. Now, so your local milieu all of a sudden has a high estrogenic concentration, okay? Therefore, your phytoestrogens could be firing to those machines that your estrogen is supposed to fire, and but there's not enough estrogen to fire through those machines. So the phytoestrogen is sort of taking over. And that's maybe what's sort of exasperating the situation.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because what I was saying, and this was only a guess, I wasn't saying this was fact. I was just telling everyone what I thought could be happening. And I said, you know, the fact that it's converting, let's just use the word converting, good bad estrogen into good estrogen, these supplements and phytoestrogens, it doesn't change the fact that a woman who has too much still has too much. I mean, I could have, you know, loads and loads of the 2-OH, you know, the 2-hydroxy, but I don't need it because I don't have enough progesterone. So it's just constantly dominating. Is that right?
Here's the interesting thing with phytoestrogens too. If you have too little estrogen, generally estrogen, if you take phytoestrogen, it's going to compensate. So you're going to get estrogenic firing. If you have a lot of estrogens on the other natural estrogens that the body makes, now the phytoestrogens can alleviate some of the responses because they compete and they're weaker estrogens. So they compete with the actual estrogens. So they bind to the machines, not allowing the actual fuel to bind. So you get less firing through the machine. So the car doesn't
start. So what
start.
Happens to that excess then? That doesn't, the phytoestrogen takes its place, but what happens to the excess?
The liver has to dump it out.
Okay, so if someone has some kind of mutation with the liver and they're not processing, or their phase two isn't upregulated or whatever, then you can get spotting and you can get all sorts of liver conditions. So, bing, yes. We solved it. So this goes back to liver congestion once again. And I see Mark's eyes glazing over a little bit. So I want to tie this in just a tiny bit to men, and as they age and also not having healthy liver detoxification and having liver congestion and gallbladder congestion and weight around the midsection and gallbladder issues and low libido. I mean, this all has to do with the same stuff. Am I right?
You're absolutely, it's all connected. You can't just isolate, even the liver doesn't work in isolation. It reacts to your stress levels, to everything else. So you have to be primed basically to sort of fire the engine correctly. Otherwise you're pouring fuel onto the fire that's not controlled and all of a sudden causing all sorts of problems. So yes, the liver is a big issue that a lot of people ignore. And I actually see about 90% of the people that I actually see have liver issues, even if that's not what they actually come to me for, but they still have liver issues. So then
coming full circle, this brings us back to what you did next with your wife, which for someone else might not be the same thing, but it would be going back to sort of basic things besides getting her to eat more of the cruciferous vegetables, but also, what else? Like in terms of digestion, and then this is going to tie us into bone loss. And
yeah, so this is actually sort of interesting. So I knew she was estrogen deficient and estrogen dominant as well. So at the same time, we sort of after we fixed her estrogenic metabolism, basically the pathway was sort of fixed up, we sort of kind of went back and started doing the therapy that we actually needed and bring up the levels of progesterone, so it sort of controls the estrogen levels. So remember the machines that we have, the estrogen and the progesterone machine coming together, so these two have to interact, and the progesterone machine also kind of controls the estrogen machine. So I had a friend basically who was an MD sort of prescribe a fancy compounded thing that we did for her that contained part some estrone, some estradiol, a bigger portion estriol, and a majority portion progesterone. And we started kind of experimenting with that to see how that goes. Because I knew, because she was estrogen deficient, her bones were also fragile. And that also runs in her family as well. Yeah, we have an interesting story about bone health if we're going to get into that too. Mm-hmm. That sort of, this is before we sort of discovered this whole estrogenic issue that we decided to sort of tackle. She broke her ankle, I mean, one of the rainy days, not like today, but it was a massive rain that she was going down the stairs at my mother-in-law's, and she slipped. It was wet. She slipped. I wasn't there, but she slipped and bam, she hit the ground. Fortunately, not her head. Her ankle completely twisted, and it was a clean crack right at the ankle. I mean, the x-ray, the doctor said, I have never seen a clean crack like this. It just came apart.
Ouch.
Boom.
Well, that's interesting.
And so within like 3 minutes, her entire leg up to her knee was swollen like a balloon, and it hurt like hell. So, and that immediately sort of triggered, okay, she has mineral deficiencies of some sort, even though we eat healthy, and her estrogen's off. So, and we'll get into the, I don't know, you want to get into the mineral aspect because we
that's really what you said. This is what's downstream. This is what's downstream of the hormones.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
People come, you know, to the forum and they come to me and they want to start with supplementing progesterone, and their questions on the, when they join the group for the first time, or how many milligrams should I take of progesterone? And, you know, my immediate response is, well, what are you doing, you know, downstream of this? Like what homework have you done prior to even thinking about progesterone?
Yeah.
Yes, very important. Go on.
Yeah, it's like basically having to go on a race. You don't just show up at the race and start running or do car racing. You got to prep. You got to go a couple of laps, warm up. You know, you got to warm the body up to sort of see where it's at, and then fix that thing up, stretch more if you're not ready, and then start running. Mm-hmm. So same thing here. And people are going to get surprised. Well, when are we going to see some results? Well, this is not like a magic pill thing. This is not Pfizer. You're not coming into Pfizer. I give you another pill. You go home and you come back with a different issue. Then I give you a different pill. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
So, yeah, but that's one of the things that I'm pretty sure that you're very familiar with is vitamin K2, that we're very, very much deficient in our Western civilization. We just don't take enough in the Western population. We do, but we weren't taking enough, and apparently she needed more. So we started upping her vitamin K2, and I have, we actually developed a formula for bone health and cardiovascular health that she took, and we supplemented.
You developed it that you something, products that you have or sell, or can you share?
We have it on Amazon.
Okay, we'd like to, before we go and wrap up at the end of our show, I want to talk about how people can get access to that, okay?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. All right, go on.
Well, can I interrupt for a moment? I don't know exactly what vitamin K2 is.
I'd love to just
give me a brief.
I'll tell you about that. And the hormonal connection as well. So that's extremely important because people only look at the mineral aspect, they forget the hormonal, or they only concentrate on the hormonal aspect and forget about the mineral. And it's all sort of tied. Bone doesn't work in isolation like every other organ. So K2 is actually the mineral. K1, everybody sort of knows. You eat your veggies, you get enough K1. And we don't have a prevalence of K1 deficiency in the Western country, especially in the U.S. We eat adequate amount of veggies to get that. And that's for blood clotting. So K2 is the other cousin of K1, but they're very different. So K2 does a couple of things. K2 activates, particularly for bone and heart, it activates two proteins. One is called osteocalcin. The other one is called MGP, matrix glyprotein. Now, osteocalcin is bone specific. So what this protein does is it ensures that calcium gets deposited properly into your bones. Matrix gla, on the other hand, roams around your arteries and your soft tissues and makes sure that calcium doesn't stick around to cause problems. It clears your arteries and soft tissues of calcium. Okay? So, and that's how nature solved the problem of calcium. Calcium is another bad child like estrogen that if you leave it alone, it's going to cause all sorts of problems and needs to be regulated. And there's a whole slew of entourage that sort of regulates calcium, including magnesium, vitamin D, and all sorts of different things. So we knew that her absorption was fine. So she's absorbing calcium is fine. We knew her vitamin D intake was fine, my wife's. So K2 was the only other thing. So we started supplementing this with her. And the analogy I like to use with K2, think of it like you're trying to build a house. You have a house, you want to build a wall, right? How do you build a wall? There's two things you can do. You can go to Home Depot, pick up a couple of bricks, get your cement, get those things and water and get your kids and pay them 10 bucks each and say, hey, go crazy at it and start, put a wall over here. I want it to be 5 feet high and X feet long. Well, you'll get a wall. I won't guarantee it's going to look good or it's going to do any good. That's the kind of wall we're building right now with our bones. We're building some kind of a wall, but we don't have a proper wall. The second way you can build that wall is you hire a contractor. So you go, you basically say, well, I need a contractor to get the right bricks, to get the right cement, get the permit in place, and bring and build a wall according to spec, right? That's the proper way to build a wall. Then you get a good solid wall that's going to withstand rain, mud, and everything else. But unfortunately, the contractor is not going to work unless you pay it, right? I don't know of any contractor that's going to work for free. So K2 is the currency that these proteins use to build that wall or to clear the arteries of calcium.
And why are we so deficient in that?
Because K2 is made only by bacteria, and they come from fermented foods.
Natto,
correctly. That's why the Asians have tremendous amounts of these things in their body, and they activate these proteins. So if you don't have K2, you're not paying these proteins to do their job. You make them, but they sit around, and they say, well, I'm not getting paid. I'm not doing anything. So you give them K2, the guy goes, oh, I got paid. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to do my job.
So just to clarify, K2, the source of K2 comes primarily from fermented vegetables, fermented foods?
Fermented foods, a lot of, where else can you find it? You find it in
chicken liver,
grass-fed beef liver, that kind of stuff has tremendous amounts of good form. There are different forms of K2. The formula that we actually use is the MK7 form, which is actually bioconverted to MK4 and the other forms as well. We still don't know what all these other forms of K2 sort of do. The science is sort of coming to light, and we're sort of learning more and more every day how these things sort of work. Mm-hmm. To make a long story short, we supplemented her with K2 every day. Sometimes she didn't like it. I put it on her in her protein shake. It's easy to do, and it's fat-soluble vitamin because it contains DNA as well, and you need DNA. So as an ancillary point, let me go back. The osteocalcin and MGP, they don't get made unless you have enough vitamin D and you have enough vitamin A. Vitamin A controls D and D controls A. So that way you don't get toxic forms of each because people overload on D, which is not good. They overload on A, which is not good.
Okay. Hang on. Two questions. You just cracked open a small can of worms here that I'm sure we can handle rapidly. One is the controversy behind supplementing vitamin D3 and how it's supposed that it can actually steal magnesium from the body and that you should not. In fact, there are certain experts and doctors out there who say you should absolutely not supplement vitamin D. And I am of the camp of when someone's really deficient, I do it for a while at pretty high levels and then like 10,000 IUs a day. And then I stop it once their levels come up.
Yeah.
I
agree with you on that. That's why I generally don't have that level of vitamin D in my formula. I have 1,000 IUs or 800 IUs. I forget what it is. But we have very low amount of IUs because the vitamin A ensures that vitamin D fires properly and doesn't steal from your magnesium. Because
so it's synergistic.
It's synergistic. You absolutely need magnesium to convert the vitamin D3 to the correct form, the active form in the liver and the kidneys. The liver comes into play again.
See, friends, this is why I don't like to isolate nutrients because without the help of an expert like yourself, you could very well be causing more harm than good. And,
absolutely.
And that you would never in life, you would never in the history of being a human sit down to a bowl of vitamin D. Never. Yeah. Or a bowl of calcium. You wouldn't.
Yeah.
They all have their synergistic components and nutrients in order for them to operate properly. And the body prefers them in food as food.
Yeah.
So the second question is, if somebody, now we don't have to get into this because this is a podcast all on its own. If someone has histamine reactions, like if they have the MTHFR, or they have a hard time methylating, and they get histamine reactions from eating fermented foods and their gut is so, these people are so difficult to help heal for me. can they just go ahead and supplement the K2, and would they be all right? Have you ever heard of anyone having a histamine reaction from a K2 supplement, from your K2 supplement?
No, nobody actually reacted to the K2 supplement, because we only have the vitamin K2, some D, and a little bit of A. That's all it has in it,
and
the medium.
Okay, and its source is from?
Fermented chickpeas.
So it is a fermented. Ooh, chickpeas, I like. So,
not even soy, yeah.
So that's interesting, because it is still fermented, which just, you know, again, this is a separate subject, but it makes me wonder. I guess the best thing would be for people to just try it anyway and see if they don't have, you know, because some people can't even take, I try to get them to take eyedroppers of coconut kefir or of the juice from fermented veggies, people who have a hard time with, you know, with they have histamine reactions, and some of them can't even do that.
Yeah, this one is actually like an isolated K2 from the fermented chickpeas. It's not the actual fermented chickpea that's in the formula. So the fermented foods, because the bacteria are fermenting these things, they're metabolizing all sorts of elements. And that's what some of these elements people are reacting to. And it's activating
so then it's
their mast
just,
cells.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just the K2 that's come from fermented chickpeas.
Okay, so this is similar to Dr. Marshall's Max Stress B and his nano products. You know, he makes these amazing Max Stress B products that are a B complex that's from fermented. I think it's grown on molasses or something like that.
Right.
And it's just the bacteria itself that has eaten the B vitamin and then had a byproduct, and that is the nutrient. So
yeah,
it's similar to that. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Okay, moving on.
Which he's no longer allowed to produce, correct?
Oh, makes me wonder about your product. Yeah, the FDA is coming down on people that are making supplements that have beneficial bacteria in them. But yours is a powder?
No, it's a liquid. It's a fat-soluble liquid, medium-chain triglyceride base. You just put it in your food, your protein shake, and you're good to go.
I love the sound of it. We'll keep that quiet then.
Yeah, we just did a.
There's no bacteria in it. Just
okay.
To let you guys know. So it's okay. Only K2 as the vitamin. It's kind of like, I don't know, the steroidal form of D3. This one is the K2 form in an isolated format. So this thing is very shelf stable. It's pretty good, and it worked for my wife. No reactions whatsoever. The medium the medium chain triglycerides actually help with gut, you know, ecology as well. So it actually, like 7 months later, just to go back to the story of the bone health, she healed pretty quickly. They put her in her cast within, they said 2 months to 3 months, she had to be in a cast. Within 6 weeks, they removed the cast and we started strength training her ankle and started coming back online. Now she's running with me. But about 10 months after the incident, similar kinds of rain happened, almost the same place. She slipped again on her same ankle, and she twisted it. And I was with a client, and she freaked out, and she called me and said, "I fell. I'm sorry. I fell on the same ankle." She was sort of crying because it swelled. So now the swelling, the thing is, the swelling was very localized. It didn't go up her entire foot. So to me, that said, you probably just twisted it. You didn't break it. Let's go take an x-ray. Okay, let's go do an x-ray, just be on the safe side. They took an x-ray, no fracture, nothing.
Right. Wow. So, how can I ask
that?
That
area was previously weakened as well.
I'm sorry, say it again.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mark.
I said that area was previously weakened as well, which is a testament to.
Yes.
I was going to say, how old is she, if we may ask?
She's pushing 50 in March.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Okay. And then I was going to say, the source of the break is always going to be stronger, but much later, not in seven months.
Not that fast. Exactly. And usually, actually, the incident, if you usually break that same area, it's usually ending up to be a compounded worse fracture or a break than before. The doctor that SARS, I don't know how you fell on the same thing and it only swollen, you didn't break it. That's, you know, but testament to the fact that we activated our protein osteocalcin that was metabolizing calcium the correct way, I think. I like to give
that's
credit
amazing.
To that.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's the silver lining here, which is that now you're sharing the story with everyone, and it's pretty profound. It's really, really is interesting. So people, you know, a lot of conventional doctors are saying, you know, putting women at her age and my age, you know, they want to put us on estrogen, and they want to, you know, we're getting to, especially women who are in menopause, and they want to put them on estrogen because you're bone health. And it's like, how about we back this train up a little bit and start with the original deficiency, which is minerals and vitamins.
But hormones do play a role in here too. So estrogen is sort of important to kind of play a role because it signals the bone breakdown and the bone, you know, regeneration sort of build up.
Right. So that, but that, wouldn't you say that, you know, if we're looking at it as an analogy of a pyramid, you know, the estrogen, the hormones are not at the bottom. Like, you can't even really make proper hormones and proper, you know, have proper metabolization. Is that a word, or did I just make that up?
Metabolism. Yeah.
Metabolism.
Good enough. Close enough.
Metabolization.
Yeah.
That's a great word. You can't have
trademark it.
Yeah. You can't have healthy metabolization if you don't have adequate minerals. You know, if you don't, if you're in bone loss, good luck with the rest of your body. Yeah. If you don't have a healthy gut functioning that's able to, where is K2 made? Is it, does the body make it in the stomach, or is it even, or is it only consumed through the food?
It's like, only consumed through the food, because the bacteria that make it are very selfishly holding on to it. Because a lot of people say, well, my gut is good. I have good bacteria in my gut. That those guys make it, so I shouldn't be even supplementing. The school of thought is sort of broken on that end. And in my opinion, those bacteria make it for themselves. They don't share it with you. Mm. And two, it's mostly in the colonic area. It's not in the absorbable part of the small intestine where you have less population of microflora. Mm. So the bacteria that... So then the question is, how does it get into cow? How does it get, you know, into beef or chicken, you know, all those? How do we get into the meats of these guys? These guys regurgitate. The cow regurgitates the food, the bacteria as well. So it breaks up the bacteria. Therefore, they absorb it into their system as well.
Delicious.
Yeah, very good stuff.
So then vegetarians, they have to get their K2 from like natto. And that would probably be the most potent form of it, I would imagine. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that is the most potent vegetarian form of K2, right?
It has the highest content of K2 is in natto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, there you go, folks. Get your K2. Okay, let me see. I had a question, more questions, unless you wanted to wrap up anything else with that particular thought. Okay.
I'd love for us, if we can, to pivot more into a little bit of like men issues and men subjects. I know we were talking primarily about women, but it also applies. My question, I know that everything you've said here, and you got to take care of the basics first, and that's your nutrition, mineralization, before you go to the hormones. For men, and I guess this is something that I kind of think about, it's regarding hair loss as you get older, also the ability for your muscles get, like when I work out now, it's sore like 24 hours later and a little longer. And where can I start with that? Or what would be a good place that you could just give me something, a takeaway from all this?
You're asking a very umbrella question here.
I know.
Workout is a tough thing. I mean, for us men, I think we work out a little bit and our muscles kind of get more fatigued quicker and they recover a little bit slower. It's very important to support muscle function through mitochondrial function, because not from just men, also women. As we age, our mitochondrial function sort of dwindles down precipitously, and the mitochondria is the energy source of the body. Proper fats are extremely important in workout, whether it's pre or post workout. They actually release energy in a much more nuanced and controlled way than carbs. So if you eat your fat, your saturated fat, proper saturated fat, and go work out, you'll have a lot more energy to recover faster from that, and you can run longer than you would if you were to eat your carbohydrates. Because there are carbohydrates that I see a lot of trainers and a lot of people that load up on carbs before they do their weight training or whatever it is. they crash and burn, and they recover a lot slower in general. Two, testosterone has a lot to do with it, particularly in men. For us, for women, it's estrogen that sort of goes down and progesterone. For us, we're highly sensitive to estrogen and progesterone. Some men think that men only make testosterone and women only make estrogen and progesterone. That's so far from the truth. I mean, our bones are examples of bones. Take care of your bones, because I see so many fractures in kids these days so easily. They work out whatever they do. Muscles, oxidative stress, insulin, carbohydrates, you know, simple carbs, they really wreak havoc on your signaling and on your hormone issues, because insulin kind of controls the show along with cortisol, especially if it's sort of stress. Your estrogens or progesterones are playing second fiddle here to these guys. So really control estrogens. And fat's important, because fat intake lowers insulin response, lowers insulin
production.
Exactly. So you want to be at the low insulin production, because at that end, you also burn fat more easily. And that's important for workouts. So supplements, like I make a home brew for us here, consisting of N-acetylcysteine that a lot of people have heard about. That's a glutathione supply of the body. I mean, that's essential for mitochondrial function and oxidative stress, as well as hormone detox.
And so that's also called NAC, for those of you who know that. One question about that is, don't you kind of have to be a little bit careful with N-acetylcysteine in terms of chelating metals? Doesn't it kind of help? Does, if you've got mercury in your teeth, or if you know that you've got high heavy metal load, heavy metal toxic load in the body, NAC can kind of encourage the dumping of that. And if you've got issues with detoxification, I only say this because I've run into it. So I'm just curious about if that is about more about dosage or about the type that you take. Or
see, here's the thing that I think with the mercury chelating, yes, it's absolutely true. It's going to sort of suck it out and sort of bind to it. But here's the funny thing about anything that contains sulfur groups. Mercury is very particular and partial to sulfur groups. It loves it. It's its best partner in life, and it binds to it like nobody's business. And that's what you want. You want to load up on the sulfur ends, because there's such good chelating, metal chelating compounds. Next best thing to sulfur is selenium. Because so far that I know, there's no stronger binder in nature, biological binding, than selenium mercury. These guys, when they're bound, they're bound. That's one of the reasons why mercury toxification leads to a lot of autistic kind of behavior, because those enzymes are selenoproteins. They require selenium to function. If mercury binds to it, that protein is dead. So if it doesn't function, you get neurological issues.
Wow. So once again, we're back to cruciferous vegetables, because that...
And Brazil nuts.
That for selenium, right.
Yes.
And so I just had I'm going to do this week. I'm going to ferment broccoli like there's no tomorrow. Like I'm gonna do it like I'm getting ready for the zombie apocalypse, because it kind of sums it all up, doesn't it? It's the cruciferous vegetable, it's the DIM, and it's also the is there K2 in fermented broccoli?
Yeah, as long as there's bacteria somewhere that's fermenting it, they're probably producing K2.
Okay.
To what amount, I don't know.
So then we have the sulfur in there, and we also have what else is in there that's so good? Everything's good in fermented broccoli. So there, let's all ferment broccoli this week. Okay, Mark?
Sounds good.
No, I was just thinking about, Robert, if you've, do you know about oxalacetate and... what that supplement does. I just started taking a little bit recently.
What? You didn't tell me about this.
Why do you take it for?
Well, it does, because it targets and deals with specifically the mitochondrial function and increases ATP at the mitochondrial level. So it works within the Krebs cycle.
Right.
And the studies that were done have been phenomenal. That the studies they've done, they found that it lengthened the life of the organisms that have were in the test group. It was something I told you about a long time ago, where they knew this was a pretty significant supplement, and it wasn't marketed because it was natural and they didn't have to synthesize it, so it never got the
You
light of
can't
day,
patent it,
essentially.
yeah. You can't patent it,
Correct.
yeah.
So
I vaguely
that's how I came
remember.
across it.
I vaguely remember that conversation. Did you send me the product label, young man?
Yes, I did send you the product label. I can do it again if you'd like. And I'm just wondering because, again, as a male myself, and losing the hair on top, I think of these things and
Yeah,
I'm doing all I can to optimize my health.
this stuff here, I think, a lot to do with DHT, the metabolite of testosterone, that we metabolize too much of it to dihydrotestosterone, which is actually several times more potent than testosterone for the androgen receptor. So we got to control that enzyme that sort of that converts testosterone to DHT. Some people are genetically predisposed because of what they inherit from their dad and the chromosomal aspects of it.
And you can't override that regardless.
That unless
That's it.
CRISPR and Cas9, the new genetic engineering kind of modification comes into play, maybe then you can actually genetically sort of reprogram yourself to kind of take care of that. But I wouldn't go there. I'm more of the natural class, sort of let nature kind of, you got dealt a series of cards. Let's just
Right.
make the best of the cards that we got, right?
He's so funny that way because I think he looks really handsome the way his hair, the way it's going. And then one time he
He
shaved it and I
does.
thought it looked really good. And he sent me a picture from, where were you? Maverick? Do you
I was in
remember
Austin
the
when I shaved my head, yeah, just to get used to it.
And
Look, I know
no,
it's a
no.
very vain thing, and out of
No.
all the health issues that I have going, I have no health issues, and I'm grateful for that. So
Yeah.
to have this little thing is just,
Welcome.
You look good, Mark. I mean, don't mess around with it. I'm going for the Jean-Luc Picard look if I ever get sort of older. So that's what I'm going for. I doesn't matter. I think it's what
Make
in
it so.
between this hair and in between there that sort of
So,
counts that matters.
you got a good head of hair, my friend. It looks good on
I
you.
know you
You
do
got a
have a
lot of
good head of
lettuce up
hair.
there.
So I'm going to jump in because I want to say, I want to be fair to Mark here, and I want to say that, when a woman is going through this, and this happens a lot, like women will start supplementing progesterone and sometimes estrogen and even testosterone, and all of a sudden they'll gain weight and they'll start losing their hair. It's really common. And I always tell them, we're not addressing down the river. I'm going to start using that more.
Exactly.
We're not addressing the root. So go back in dose or get off completely, and then let's start talking about the basic foundation of what you might be missing. But it's a much bigger deal when women, we think, when women start to lose their hair. But it is a big deal for men too, because it signifies in our society aging. And and to some degree,
Virility is attached to
virility.
it, the
Yeah.
idea of it, right?
And it is harder for women, but I think we need to give credit where credit is due and say, you know what? We have to say men can be insecure with it if they want to be and feel the way they feel about it. So having said that, when it happens to a woman, what do you think is going on in that case? Like, I know it can be many, many different scenarios, but could we correlate it to what Mark or what any man is going through who might be like, could you be losing your hair because you're also your hormones are totally out of whack?
Completely. I think
Yeah.
that's sort of related. Stress, I think it's a very common denominator in both men and women. It really throws the entire, the sympathetic, parasympathetic system. Sex hormones are firing through the repair pathway. And you only make those when you're happy and you want to reproduce. But when you're sort of stressed, that's not priority anymore.
Okay,
You need
friends, so
to,
stop and let me just. So, friends, this is exactly what I'm always talking about. He just said the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system. So, that's the fight or flight, I call the fight or flight and the rest and digest. And he just said that sex hormones are made in your when you're in the rest and digest, not in the fight or flight. In the fight or
Exactly.
flight, they take a back seat. So, that is. huge when it comes to the fact that cortisol in a lot of us is up there because of life, because of caffeine, because of infection in the body, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so there goes the libido. There goes the, you know, normal hormone function. There goes your happy hormones. There goes your sleep.
Totally.
Carry on.
Yeah. No, completely. I completely agree. So we're sort of juggling two different things. But for men, I sort of, for me particularly, every day I take my N-acetylcysteine as supplemented and R-lipoic acid that completely supports the glutathione. And I've seen tremendous effects. When I go sprinting, I don't run anymore because I used to run 7-10 miles a day in my younger days. But my knees started telling me that I'm not happy with that amount of strenuous exercise. So now I sprint. I try to sort of sprint.
That's
easier. It's faster.
Well, it's shorter, right? Shorter duration.
It's shorter, and it gives you into a high intensity training mode type of thing. Your cardio pumps in. Your entire endocrine paracrine system is sort of firing differently, and you're burning fuel differently. In my opinion, much more efficiently. So it helps. I mean, ever since we started taking those things, that home brew, which I give most of my clients anyway, I put them on, then they've seen, especially with the ones with the liver issue, they really see tremendous difference. That completely transforms the way you sort of react. You go longer, you go easier, you recover faster. My knees don't feel as bad. My muscles recover a lot faster. I can sprint longer. So, and I just turned 50 last month. So
nice.
I'm actually at perfect. A better, thank you. I feel better now than I did in my 30s. So,
Good. Well, let's talk about that. Unless Mark, you have more questions about. I want to talk about the products that he has because I'm interested. I want to try them. I really want to try both of them, the homebrew and the K2. So, how can we get these things? Do we have to? Yeah. How can we get them?
Yeah. Let me see if I got that thing lying around somewhere around here. I think I got one of these things. Yeah. This is my K2. I don't know if you guys can sort of see.
A little higher.
Up and towards your camera because the light is on there.
Gotcha.
Oh, sorry. Let me see if I can do this.
Perfect. And then, that's not, I just took a picture of it. Okay. That's actually, you've got a little website link to that.
Yeah, I do, but you can also purchase it on Amazon. It's called NutriK2. You can check it out. That's there. So I'll probably, I love the cat.
This is Gonzalez, my cat. And
hi, Gonzalez.
Wanted the Nate to sense the K2 was in the air.
No.
It's catnip.
Exactly. Exactly.
Questions. Okay, and then your home brew.
Yeah, the home brew is something I actually concoct at home. I don't have any kind of label or stuff on it. I just kind of mix it at home. End of the month, each client sort of requests it. I try to not to do too much because I haven't produced this in any way. So this is something I concoct at home and ship it for mostly the clients that I sort of use and selectively to people who want to sort of try it out.
Okay, so then we would contact you through your website, which is...
Yeah, shoot me an email, basically. That's the easy way. Contact me through the website, phdnutrition.com, nutrition with double O.
And then you want to give your email or do you want them to go to your website to get that?
The email is hello@phdnutrition.com. Easy.
And nutrition with two O's.
NOOTRITION. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
So when you have a client, the first order of business is to understand, to see what's going on in the body, obviously, first. So you would require a hormone panel, blood tests, and all of this.
I really don't know where I start out from. It's different with every client. So I usually start out with a general questionnaire to see where they're coming from and what's actually high priority on their list of what that's ailing them. And sometimes we're sort of both surprised because it takes us from that initial direction to start from somewhere entirely new. And they're surprised. For example, my gut's hurting. Why are we starting at the brain? Well, you know, when we start fixing that, then your gut, peristalsis can actually start being normal. Unless you fix your digestion, I'm not going to start messing with your hormones, period.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be sure that you're eliminating things. It starts at the basics, like Kitty said. You start at the basics. I don't touch hormones. Are scary things to me. These guys, they require so minute amounts of stuff to have profound effects for a very long time. So you don't mess with hormones. So that's what I've learned, at least from nature. So start at the basics. Make sure you're eliminating properly. If it's a hormonal issue, do a panel to make sure that they're metabolizing at least the estrogen correctly. See where their cortisol, their stress level, their sleep patterns, and things of that sort are. Fix those. Usually when those are fixed, everything else falls online. We don't even have to touch what was ailing them in the beginning. Some of them are actually shocked. Oh, I don't have a digestive issues anymore. What did you do? Nothing. It was all you.
Now, can you work with a client long distance? They don't have to be in front of you?
Yeah, most of them are actually that way. Yeah, most of them are that way.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Well, we work very similarly. I like this. I might have to make an appointment. Yes, I'm not. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry to interrupt, Kat. I'm always all about, and I always get Kelly to do this as well, because you've said so much great stuff, and it's obvious that most people have to start with a total gut makeover as a beginning, right? But you talked about optimizing one's buffer system. Mm-hmm. What's some takeaways where people can go, okay, what can I do right away to optimize my buffer system to kind of get in line with
what your biology is all about? Yeah, totally.
Correct.
Biggest thing, stress. Stress management. You cannot eliminate stress. We have stress whether we like it or not. It's here to stay. It's probably going to get worse. Sleep is a big thing. Stress is a major factor. I usually don't deal with anybody that comes angry, because it becomes a tug of war.
Battle, more or less.
The first prescription is basically go do some yoga for a couple of months before we can talk.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to set, because if you come from an anger perspective, and you can talk to people even on forums. I feel a lot of people are angry. They jump from practitioner to practitioner. It's like, this guy didn't fix me. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Did you give it enough time? Did you try exactly what happened? Because you really have to work extremely hard to break your body. I have to go through hell to basically break somebody's body, even if I tried, because it's so resilient, even if it's broken. Yeah, I understand there are issues going around, but experiment, try things, be open to it. Unless they're willing to sort of surrender and go with it, because I think that's the point. You accept where you're at, and you try to say, okay, I know I have these issues. I'm not going to be a 15-year-old triathlon jumping 15 meters up in the air at my 60 years of age. Everything has a phase, and we have to sort of operate within those phases. I can't right now at 50 think that I'm going to be like 20. It's ridiculous. That's not how biology works. Mother Nature sort of works her rules. So we have a beginning and we have an end. It's just a question of how you reach that end. I don't want to reach that end in an abrupt, broken, medicalized system in the hospital. That's not how I want to go. And that's not how I want my clients to go. So the question is, let's replenish that buffer zone. Stress, big time. Sleep, because that tremendously linked to your stress. Sometimes I don't even run tests for cortisol because I can tell what pattern they're at. Why do you need to run tests if you sort of know? Experiment and see what happens. Sometimes it works.
Well, this is a catch-22 with the sleep, because it's not like like saying dehydration. Okay, we'll just start drinking more water. Well, you know, most people who have an issue with sleep, they have an issue with sleep because they're not sleeping.
Exactly.
And if they could just get some sleep, they would. Maybe 1% of those people are choosing not to go to bed because they're just busy in their head and doing other things. But most of them, you know, they fall asleep and then they wake up and can't go back to sleep, or they can't go to sleep at all. And then when they do, it's up and awake and asleep and awake. And then there's the ones that wake up to use the bathroom. So there's all these different reasons why someone might not be able to sleep. And you were able to address those, obviously.
Yeah, as best as we can. I'm not a sleep expert by any means, but I like the normal, usual suspects, you know, turn off your phones. Don't be on your phone at 11 o'clock at night. Go to bed by 10. I'm in bed by 10. I'm sleeping. I do wake up middle of the night because I drink a lot of water. You know, I like drinking water. I got to go. You know, the kidney's going, the bladder has to, you know.
Well, you
and
are.
Don't
you
watch The Walking Dead before you go to sleep.
Stop. Sorry?
That's a big one.
Say what?
Don't watch The Walking Dead before you go to sleep.
Actually,
she couldn't sleep last.
He's making fun of me. Oh my God! Did you see last night's episode?
Stop! No. But she was up all night. She couldn't sleep because she watched the episode, and it was disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean that.
Well, that's
increases
my reason.
Your cortisol levels
why.
Before you go to sleep.
I just don't
once
have
in a while, it's okay not to sleep. You know, sleep, you know, stay up all night and watch TV, it's okay once in a while. But just don't make it chronically a habit because that becomes an issue. Especially with kids. We go to parties, the kid's on his iPhone till 11:30 at night. You should be in bed.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Your iPhone. TV's off.
So I have this, like you said, you really don't like to take angry clients. Who does, right? But I don't like to take, or I won't, I can't, because it's out of my scope of practice. I can't take people who have been on mood stabilizers or antidepressants for longer than 6 months.
That's
I can't
a tough
do
one.
It. Yeah. So how do you feel about that in terms of not just hormones, just in terms of trying to get someone well?
Yeah, this whole antidepressant thing has really blown out of proportion the past 30, 40 years, since the 1970s, I think. It was really a hypothesis that was based on, your neurotransmitters are off, and everybody's going after the neurotransmitter thing. Oh, yeah, get your tryptophan in, get your tyrosine in, and make sure your magnesium's up, and B vitamins are set, and they still don't get well. They go on antidepressants. The problem is it gets addictive. The neuron and the brain is very sensitive to these kinds of things, and they react and they get sensitized, they get resistance, kind of like insulin. And that's why the dosage has to constantly go up after a period of time. With major depressive type disorders, I'm pretty sure it works, even though that's not my scope of practice generally to talk about these things, because inflammation is part of what I'm interested in. The cytokine response, which is the inflammatory cascade in the brain, is very different than your immune response. And once you turn those guys on, it's really hard to turn it off. So, and inflammation is at the heart of this issue. It's not always a neurotransmitter balance or amino acid balance or take your 5-HTP. Sometimes it is.
Mm-hmm.
But the timing of your macronutrients at night or in the mornings or in the day, what you take and how you take it, can have a profound effect, and people can actually taper off. People who have been on antidepressants or anti-anxiety, whatever have you, I think they really need to taper off. You can't cut them off. They got to be on it. Try the different things. The way I usually do, because I have some clients that are on medications, and I don't mess with medications unless it's really a family member and I really want to experiment, that they're willing to experiment, because it's not a democracy when it comes to my family. I'm the guy. I tell you, this is what needs to be done, and you do it. With my dad, it was that way. And my dad surrendered. I am. And with my dad, it was the same way. And my dad was okay. The doctor said, your son's going to kill you. My dad said, it's okay. He's my son. Let him kill me. But I don't do that with clients. But at the same time, but health is not a democracy. Health is something that's a gift that you sort of cherish and you take care of. You don't just, excuse the language, piss it away because of whatever that we want to do. So you got to taper off those clients sort of slowly. I got a lot of people that come with medications, and some of which I know, some of which I don't, because they got so many medications these that I haven't even heard of. Like, what is this for? Oh, I have three medications for blood pressure. Okay, well, stay on it. We're not going to take you off. I want you to start doing this, for example. We start doing that. If nothing changes and they're stable for it, I say, okay, take one of those guys off for a couple of days. See what happens. If you're starting to fall apart, go back on it. But if sometimes I find that when they go off it, nothing happens. Their system is stable. Then they start coming off the second one. Then we see if that's stable. Then we start tweaking things around. Then the third one comes off. You slowly sort of taper them off. Before you know it, they're off most of their meds. And they get
It comes back to the maxim that's been said for so many years before pharmaceutical: body heal thyself. You're just optimizing the body to get to that place where it does the work. You're no longer depending on a pill.
I don't know if you know statistically, but metabolically, most of the meds, about 70 to 80% of the medications, in as an umbrella term, medications that are made today, they get metabolized and have to be neutralized by the liver. Mm-hmm. So if you're taxing the liver by 80% crap that you're putting in, what is it going to do with the natural stuff that you're producing, the estrogen it's supposed to detoxify, right, the pesticide? So that means you have an assembly line that's coming through, but you don't have enough guys to package the stuff. Mm-hmm. Things are flowing over in the assembly line. They're breaking. You start flowing things, and you got to taper these things off. Ease it up on the liver. Ease it up on the stuff. And once some of these systems come back online, everything sort of equilibrates, and it starts in the gut. You know very well. You know, mm-hmm, you're the gut gal.
Healthy gut girl.
That's right.
I like that. I like that. Well, I hope you're ready, because I think that you're probably going to get bombarded with an awful lot of new clients based on this, because
I certainly hope so. This has been great.
Because what everyone is really looking for, I've noticed, is someone who can give them personalized attention based on what they're going through. And even, you don't even have to go to a conventional doctor to get what people are getting. You can go to a nutritionist and get the same kind of clinical, you're going on the paleo and you're taking this whey protein it's the same kind of clinical model that you can get now from almost everyone. And it's a bummer. I mean, it's good in a way because it helps a lot of people. But the thing that I think you and I do differently, and you sound like really like I really just want to like come and hang out and shadow you, is that, you know, you really isolate and specify with each person's individual needs. And that is pretty special. So that's cool. I'm really happy that I had you here.
Thank you. Happy
I want
to
have you again, and maybe we can even just narrow things down even more. Have you as a guest and say, okay, this time we're going to talk about inflammation and diet, you know? And
yeah, inflammation, like really I'd love narrow, to hear more about too.
Because you're so much like Dr. Marshall in that you've got this massive wealth of information that we could honestly probably talk till 7 o'clock and still have more to talk about. And that can be overwhelming for people, but it's also fun for me, and I don't know when to stop. So Mark is over here giving me cues. So we're going to wrap it up. But I want you to one more time give your website.
Yeah, it's http://, all that kind of stuff, PhD Nutrition, again with the double O, .com. Yeah.
And then you mentioned something else about a seminar coming up, or you told me this before. Is there something you're doing coming up, or did we surpass that because of the power outage we had last week?
No. I think one of the things I want to do, I had a breast health workshop that we did in collaboration with my sister and somebody else that's a community is a big shot in the community for women's health and stuff here. And that was actually successful. So I'm sort of thinking about doing an online course for breast health with a different kind of risk factors that are associated with breast health. But I just don't know how much response there is, how much interest there would be in there, because hormones are an issue that I can make an entire course out of. That would be the why, the how, and the what tests to do, what things to eat, kind of like the stuff that we sort of talked about more in depth.
Yeah.
Then there's the obesity, there's the diabetes kind of thing linked to it, there's the genetics linked to it, then there's the stress, life factor kind of stress. I want to kind of isolate each of these risk factors into a course, but I just don't know whether people are sort of receptive to this, yay, nay. So I'd love to get some of feedback from people that are in, because I would rather have somebody tell me what they need rather than me coming up, here's the curriculum, this is what we're going to cover, take this course or don't take this course.
Well, so I'm your gal for that, for sure. I can certainly give you a lot of information from our end. So, I think it is in demand. I think, I hope it's not just for practitioners, but for everyone, because I think it's very much in demand. People want to start taking their health into their own hands and not just be this sort of like, reading the occasional blog or article on something, but actually know what they're talking about. So I think it's a great idea. Keep us posted on that.
Okay.
And,
will do.
Mark, you got anything
else?
Yeah,
we appreciate you being here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you guys' time. Mark, I know we're starting, I don't know what time it is, but we went overtime with you. I think you're in New York or something, right?
I am. I'm in New York. It's 8:15. It's okay.
So thank you so much.
But after talking to you, I'm going to go for a quick sprint in the schoolyard down the
road. All right. And thank you, Kitty. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. And we'll talk with you soon, and we'll have you back.
You got it.
All right, great. Thank you.